And it is John Gibbons for the last coach home of the season. And we have to start with the champions, whether we like it or not. And it is Dave Mooney to talk us through yesterday, Dave. Now, I wanted Man City to either lose, obviously, or be 3-0 up at halftime so we could all just relax and say, oh, forget about it. You did neither of those things, so I'm very cross.
Sorry about that. there was a point in the second half. I mean, like, let's be clear here. I think Liverpool were a bit unlucky with the City that they ran into yesterday, because that City performance. I mean, what a time to chuck in genuinely your worst performance of the season. There was a point when Coutinho made it 2-0. There was a point, I didn't watch much of the game after that. I was on my phone, just kind of constantly refreshing Twitter, just going, well, let's just wait for the inevitable Liverpool goal now, because that's how the afternoon is going. And in my head, all that was bouncing around was, you know, it's 10 years since City won the title with Aguero's goal in the last minute. City are going to lose today, and the game is going to finish here, and we're going to think City have just got over the line, and then Liverpool are going to score a last minute winner against Wolves, and that's going to be the kind of payback for 2012. 2012, 2014, 2019, and now 2022. They've won it on the last day of the season. One of these days, they're not going to be able to do that. And one of these days, I'm going to have to front up to that. But thankfully, this isn't that day yet. City were atrocious for 74 minutes, 75 minutes. They scored. Well, as soon as they scored one, the momentum shift was very similar to Real Madrid in the Bernabeu, that Champions League exit night. There'd have been Real Madrid fans in the ground that night that had absolutely no doubt that they were going to go back and score another one before time was up. There will have been City fans that will have had absolutely no doubt that City would have gone back and made it 2-2 and made it 3-2. I wasn't one of them. But that, you know, there's people with more confidence than I have, and you could sense it as soon as. I mean, I did think when Gundogan scored, if they get a second one pretty quickly, they will do it. It's about getting level now, pretty much straight away, and the fact that they scored on 76, 78, that was the momentum shift that they needed, and. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I thought on 75 minutes, I thought they had, I mean, I don't want to swear, but I thought they had made an absolute pig's ear of it. And all they had to do was win a game. They've spent all season winning games against tough teams. I'm not going to say Aston Villa were pushovers, but they had nothing to play for. You could not have handpicked a better opposition for the final day of the season than a team that has absolutely nothing to play for. And they were messing it up. And... yeah, I kind of feel like I need to apologise to all of your listeners because once again we played a get out of jail free card on the final day of the season, and it's just that you guys were the victims of it this time instead of it being United. I'm we can agree that when it was United it was funny, but when it's
brilliant,
it's not funny, is it? So yeah, right. I'm genuinely sorry about that.
Well, yeah, it's funny that the Aguero one, we were actually in a pub in Anfield, and I'd been lucky enough to play at Anfield that day, and then we all sort of went to the pub to watch the game, and as you know, everyone sort of went mad and celebrated the way it went sort of crazy. Yeah. When Aguero went out, I think as much for the moment as it was
take some comfort in the fact that United fans were celebrating City winning this title, because it meant that you didn't make it. What would it have been, 20 titles? Would it have drawn
I think the feeling is a potential quadruple would have they'd have to shut up about 99, which they wouldn't have been too happy about either. So
having experienced what Real Madrid have got to offer, and I like, weirdly, it feels really odd the way the season's finished, because I've said all season that I think Liverpool have got better firepower than City, and City have got a bit more creativity than Liverpool without the finishers, and we've ended up finishing with City scoring more goals, but I think there's more goals in this Liverpool side than there is than this City side. You'll beat Real Madrid, so you'll have another European Cup. I have absolutely no doubts about that.
Well, that'll be fine. We'll settle with that, obviously, just the three trophies. Sort of go back to the game a little bit, David. You know, you talk. I haven't seen a single minute of City. I haven't even seen the goals yet, and that's not out of some sort of pettiness, really. Basically, I went to our game, and then I went to the pub, and then I went to bed, and now I'm talking to you. So I will watch it eventually. But is there a reason City was so bad? Was the team selection problems? Was it just a flatness? Was it nerves? You know, what do you sort of put it down to that they didn't throw in at such a stinker?
Sounds absolutely horrendous, this, given what he's done for the club. But Fernandinho should not have been starting at centre-back. For the entirety of that first half, Ollie Watkins was stood on him, and the goalkeeper, Rob Olsen, was just pinging the ball over the top, and Fernandinho just could not compete with Watkins. They scored. I mean, that's not how they scored the opener, but the opener was, you know, sometimes when you watch City play, they do this thing where they pass it under pressure at the back, and then all of a sudden, two passes, they've got a little bit of an advantage in midfield, and you go, oh, the opposition are in trouble here. Villa did that to City, and so City were pressing them, and then there was a couple of passes, and suddenly they were in down the left, and you were kind of like, oh, this could be a problem here now. And it was across to the back post. Cancelo hadn't followed Matty Cash's run. He gets his head on it, and it's a decent header. It's a little bit at Edison. He gets a hand on it, and it's like parts of the stadium will think that he's got it, that he's kept it out, but he hasn't. And then immediately after that, they targeted Fernandinho with Watkins. He got in and had a one-on-one with Edison, and it took John Stones basically sprinting back to shoulder charge him off the ball to keep that one from going in. Early in the second half, Laporte misjudges where Watkins is, and he's clean through again, and he bounces one wide. And then you get around to the Coutinho thing, and it's just been, it was a complete imbalance. And you have to say, like, as soon as Guardiola changed things, it started to get better. I mean, he never makes substitutions early, Guardiola. Mm-hmm. And he took Fernandinho off at halftime, which told you how much of a torrid time he was having. He brought on Zinchenko, which made City a little bit wider and got City to the byline on the left-hand side as well as the right-hand side. And for the first 2-3 minutes of the second half, they did more than they'd done in the entirety of the first half. They had a little spell and then ended up back on the kind of in a little bit of a turgid moment. Villa scored again, and that was like the kick up the backside that really woke them up. I think when Gundogan scored, I mean, he then brought Gundogan on to exploit extra space in the middle. He brought Sterling on because Mahrez wasn't doing too much, and all three of his subs played a part in winning the game. But when Gundogan scored, nobody really saw it coming. It was one of them where it was a goal that was out of the blue.
Right, okay.
And that shifted the momentum ultimately. I think the fact that City were having such a stinker up until then, the strange thing is, all the narratives that we were talking about for the final day of the season about Gerrard, about Coutinho, about City not having a striker, all those sorts of things. The one that they actually were fighting against was this one that where they, there's not many times where City start badly, not necessarily conceding goals, but in terms of a performance where they start badly and get better. They've now done it against West Ham, and they did it against Villa in the two last games of the season. And that's not normal. City don't normally do that. It was almost like West Ham was the exception that proved the rule, and then Villa turned out to be, they might be onto something here. They might be able to do something. I don't know. It was a crazy afternoon, and I would much rather, like you, they'd done a solid 3-0 where they were 3-0 up inside 10 minutes, but I mean, absolute bastards, aren't they?
I mean, all of them, the footballers, the things they do to us are absolutely unreal. When you feel that momentum change, you know, in the ground, you know, it's funny you talk about the Real Madrid game. I spoke to Sid Lowe after that, just to sort of find out, you know, from his and a Spanish perspective, if you like, what it was sort of like and the mood. And we talked about when something changes, you know, in a football ground, and you could just sort of feel almost a greater power. And there is going to make something happen. And, you know, you've been on the receiving end of that this season, and now you've sort of been part of that, really. It is a remarkable thing, isn't it? How something, you know, and a goal could just change a football game so much. Yeah. You can go from, this is the worst City performance of the season, maybe of
well, it, yeah. It was the worst 75 minutes I've seen of City this season, and then the final 15 minutes they were fine, and yeah. you shouldn't go into a game and play 15 minutes and win it. It shouldn't be how it happens. But because of when they scored and how they scored, the momentum shift was incredible. I must say, I think the fans were great after. As you would expect, you go 2-0 down and everybody in the stands is doom and gloom. You can feel the kind of the collective kind of dishevelment almost of this group of people who are just like, I am watching this football team just fold. They've been dealt a really, really good hand, and they've decided to play it so badly, and you could kind of feel that kind of manifestation of that coming true. And as soon as that first one went in, the fans were like, right, come on, get on with this then. And suddenly the mood changed, and the real kind of, like, it was a really, really positive atmosphere after that first goal went in. And you think that, like, at 2-1 down, you think that shouldn't be true. It should still be quite anxious. When Dzeko scored, I mean, I know it was like 91st minute, so there's only a couple of minutes left. But when Dzeko scored, there was still the kind of feeling of, why the hell have you done this now? Why couldn't you have done this 20 minutes ago and given us a fighting chance? Why now? And I, like, it's almost like that's the reason, because like Gundogan did it with 12 minutes left. So there was a fighting chance at that point. And so it was a case of, right, we've got 12 minutes, go on, do something now. You know, like, actually, we'll get behind you. You offer us something. And they did. And like, that was what City were on the receiving end of in the Bernabeu. The noise and the Real Madrid fans who just, like, it was almost like, we need one more goal, but it's Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. Of course we are going to get it. That's how it works. And the Etihad is, it's never always been that for City, but it's kind of becoming that. And I also think, it helps that you know, Villa had relatively very little to play for. They didn't need to hang on to their winning margin to survive, or to, you know, to make Europe or something like that. And it just became overwhelming pressure in the end, I think.
Yeah, it is an interesting one, is that if Villa, you know, needed a point or whatever, yeah, would they
it's a different end, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, would they have approached, you know, certain things differently? I think, you know, there's the freedom of having nothing to play for, but then, you know,
there's the curse of it as well.
Yeah,
look at Southampton at the end of the season. They've had nothing to play for weeks.
And I think you can play with the freedom, but until it gets a bit harder, then everyone's like, oh, sod this.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one moment in the second half where I was a little bit worried that the narrative hadn't quite finished with us, because Villa got a throw in. Well, City were doing what they should have done in the Bernabeu and kept the ball at the corner flag, and were doing that. You know, how you kick it off the opposition, you win a throw in, you win the throw in, kick it off the opposition, get another throw in. They were trying to do that, and Gabriel Jesus just absolutely wellied it into Phil Foden's face, and it goes out for a Villa throw. And then at that point, they've used all three subs, and Edison goes down. And goes, yeah, my hamstring's gone, lads. I just can't. And then when you watch him in the trophy stuff afterwards, he's hobbling around everywhere. So it wasn't like he's wasting time. Yeah. It was like, look, just get up, because the referee will add this time on. So just get up and get this game finished. And he's there with the trainer on, just going, I can't really move. And I've got visions of John Stones taking the gloves and having to stand in goal. And Villa going, we only need a goal to draw level here. Let's shoot from all angles, because he's not a goalkeeper. And it's just like that. I was terrified. And in the end, they put some magic spray on Edison's leg and kind of said, look, just stand there, do nothing but stand there. And then they carried on taking throw-ins in the corner. And there was a real kind of like, I bet the jeopardy was not actually that much, but there was a moment in my head I'm thinking, just don't do something stupid now.
Yeah, it's funny because I was on the cop. I say obviously I'm not always in the cop, very rarely actually, but I was in the cop for this one, and the rumours going around and stuff like that, and it's always like, you know, is this true? Do you know what I mean? I couldn't quite believe that you were 2-0 down, and then you wait someone showing the phone. So, but even sort of, you know, while it's going on, there's whispers. But I think if someone said John Stones has gone in goal, I'd have been
like,
get out.
The rumours thing as well, like there's always something between our two clubs as well, because the rumours thing, I don't know if you remember this, in 1997 you came to Main Road and you went 2-0 up. It was the final day of the season, you went 2-0 up. And we scored two in the either one before halftime or one after halftime or two in the second half. And we needed to win. We needed to better Sheffield Wednesday, Southampton or Coventry's result to stay up. And all three of them were drawing. But information from the crowd got to the players that one of that Sheffield Wednesday or Coventry or someone was losing. And so at 2-2, we're going down. And Steve Lomas takes the ball to the corner flag and starts wasting time. And your lads are just going, what are you doing? You're not winning the game. What do we do here? Because like, we don't care. We don't really care if you're wasting time. So like, there's always something. Like fake news or something like that between City and Liverpool, and it's just the Brighton one as well. I remember when there was a rumor, I was outside the Etihad for that. There was a rumor that Liverpool had, I think he'd already taken the lead by the time Brighton took the lead. And I think between Brighton scoring and City equalising, there was a rumour going around that you'd conceded again and everything was fine. It's just like, it just hasn't happened. Just stop believing these people who have radios. They're not, for whatever reason, they're not right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, next season's going to be interesting. I think we're going to be a little bit better in that, not better than we are now, but better across the course of the season. It's interesting, Klopp. Talked about inconsistencies in the first half of the season being the reasons that we did sort of win the league, if you like, if you get a nitpick, I suppose, of a team that have got so many points. And so I think we're going to be across the season going to be better, but you've signed a forward who looks fairly handy. So I guess what I'm saying is, David, I feel like we're going to have all this again next year, whether we want it or not.
Listen, City are not going away, Liverpool are not going away, Klopp's not going away, Guardiola's not going away. They are all, I mean, Guardiola is a madman. Klopp is a lunatic, and they both know football. They know football inside out. And, you know, I get the impression that I think they wind each other up. I think Klopp winds Guardiola up, and I think Guardiola winds Klopp up. But I think they have enough respect for each other that they don't really let it spill over publicly. It spilled over a bit towards the end of this season. I think that was a little bit of Guardiola being weird at times because he does that. But it's just because he's so intense, and you know, Klopp's intense, and he says weird things from time to time. And I think when both of them have finished in England, I think they would actually quite happily have a beer with each other and talk about what they've done and what they've achieved. And it would be kind of, it'd all be all right. And then it's kind of us that have to pick up the pieces of this rivalry, whatever this rivalry is, because I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, because there's times when I watch Liverpool and I think they're a great side to watch. There's times when I watch them and think, will you just piss off again and again and again with these goals at times when like you really need them. And I don't know. I think this is going to carry on for some time. They've both built real good empires at the two clubs, and I mean, I don't see anything other than a Liverpool City top two next season. What order? I mean, it's really hard to predict, because you'll be stronger. I think City will definitely be stronger. Roll on August when we might have a little bit of an idea. I don't know.
The title running starts mid-August, unfortunately.
I know. God, when you put it like that.
David, thanks so much for joining us. I'm sure it wasn't too difficult this morning.
It wasn't at all. I've had worse ones. So, I genuinely mean this. Commiserations, because you've had a fantastic season, and we couldn't let you win all four. So go and win three of them.
Yeah, well, we've got one more to go, so we're all right. Top man, David, cheers to your time. I'm from the top of the league to 17th, but no less smiling is Alfie Kemp from LS11. And Alfie, you did it. And a lovely stoppage time winner to celebrate as well. How are you feeling?
Over the moon, I think, to be honest. I think, the overriding feeling is disbelief. I really think a lot of Leeds fans, including myself, I really didn't expect us to do it. I really thought that watching the performances against Brighton last week and Chelsea before, we were just so poor. Just there was no fight in it. And going into the last day, Burnley with a bit of a good result in midweek, we really thought with them, with the home advantage, that they were going to do us. But, you know, we pulled it out of the bag. So it's just complete, you know, relief. Disbelief is Is it, you know, we've, it's obviously got to be tapered a bit because it shouldn't have been this hard, but you know, for now we've got to enjoy it because we've done it, and it's obviously staved off a lot of the potential problems that could have happened if we had gone down.
Yeah, it would have been, I mean, look, no one wants to be relegated, but it was, I've read a few things, Alfie, by saying, you know, if Leeds had gone down, you know, it would have, I mean, not been a disaster, but you know, there would have been a lot of tough decisions to make in terms of finances.
Yeah, definitely. There's, I mean, to be honest, I think a lot of us had already made our peace with relegation. I think, again, I say, having watched the Chelsea game after that, we were certainly thinking that it's going to be really tough. And obviously Burnley kept grinding out results, so it certainly looked like we were going down. So we'd kind of already, as I say, made our peace with it already. But, you know, you would have looked at the players and, I mean, Rafinha probably will go anyway, but we would have only got 25 million in for his release clause. And then, you know, Calvin Phillips is probably going to go. A number of other players would probably go as well. And then, you know, who comes in as coach, what happens with the board. There just would have been a lot of uncertainty, I think. So it's, yeah, in terms of finances, it's absolutely massive. Obviously, one season out, if we had come straight back up next year, would have been fine. But you never know with the Championship. I mean, we certainly know after 16 years, there's absolutely no guarantee that going down from the Premier League means you're going to come straight back up. So it certainly gives us a lot better a platform to start rebuilding now, because after the Bielsa era, we need to sort of kick on now and give Marsh a fair crack at the whip, give him some money, let him build the squad that he wants to build. And obviously that's a lot easier to do when you're still in the Premier League than if you had gone down.
No, absolutely. In terms of the game itself then, how did you watch it and how did you follow what was going on? Because a bit like ourselves, really, you find it, you know, you're obsessing over two games that are taking place. I mean, you must have feel like Leeds have played about 20 times over the last few weeks, because when you're in these situations, either at the top or the bottom, you know, everyone's games matter, don't they? So, you know, so Thursday night's a big event, even though you're not playing. So it's timing. Yeah. But how did you cope with it all Sunday?
I mean, as you say, it has felt like there's been a lot more Leeds games. You know, Thursday was probably the most nervous I've been for a game all season, and we weren't even playing. So, you know, that says it all, really. But no, I went to the pubs to watch it because I thought, honestly, it would be a relegation just to kind of drown my sorrows with a couple of mates. But it was great. The pub had all the matches on. It was sort of 75% Liverpool and City fans, and then all the Leeds fans are kind of shoved in a little corner of the pub with two dodgy TVs. So and then I was just, I mean, they had the score updates on the telly, obviously, but I had, because the Burnley Newcastle game was a bit behind, so I had the updates on my phone. And I mean, I'm from Newcastle originally, so I got a lot of mates who are Newcastle fans, and they were letting me know what had happened. So, but, you know, I mean, Newcastle took the leads fairly early on, and then once they went 2-0 up, you're thinking, you know, bloody hell, this actually could be happening. Like, it was just unbelievable. But in the end, to do it with, you know, in the pub properly celebrating with loads of Leeds fans was, it was the perfect way to do it. Because I think, to be honest, a lot of people just stayed home because they just didn't want to be around people when we went down. But obviously, it didn't happen that way. So it was a stressful watch, but thankfully, you know, we pulled out probably our best performance of the season, which is a low bar to set. But, you know, when we needed to pull it out of the bag, we did.
Yeah, and that is the most important thing. I mean, Jack Harrison's winner doesn't really matter in a way, but try telling that to him, I think. And you know, just having that moment where you're like, that's it, you know what I mean? It's definitely going to happen now in a goal. The one of my favourite goals to celebrate, you know, maybe it's like the, you know, you go 1-0 up and then it's a bit back against the wall and then you score a second in stoppage time. You're celebrating the goal and also the win. And for you guys, it must have been you celebrating a goal, you celebrating survival, you know, it's the relief, it's all the emotions, you know, I'm sure coming out at that moment.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at that point, I think, to be honest, we were thinking it's probably done. I mean, even though, you know, at that point, you're thinking, you know, Burnley, I mean, I was getting texts from my mate saying Burnley are absolutely peppering us here. And I was thinking, oh my God, they're going to get a last minute equaliser even, and we're going to go down. But, you know, I thought the draw was definitely done, because obviously they were down to 9 at that point, and it was just, we were just camped on the edge of their area. So I was just expecting for us just to kind of grind it out, just see out the point, and then hope Burnley don't get an equaliser. But as you say, to have that goal to kind of be like, that's the moment, that's when it's done, rather than, you know, waiting at the final whistle and it's like, oh my God, you know, what have Burnley done? Is it over yet? That kind of thing. It was just sort of, it was the perfect end to kind of put a full stop on the survival and just say, right, that's it. And, you know, it was an absolutely, I mean, took a bit of a deflection, but, you know, doesn't really matter about that. It was the best goal of the season for us. So, yeah, we don't really care about that. But it was just, a brilliant, brilliant moment. Probably more of a celebration than staying up, to be honest.
So how do you make sure this doesn't happen again? Because, you know, Leeds' first season back in the Premier League was a strong one. I think everyone would agree. This time you were in a relegation battle. You had awful luck with injuries, I know that, but apart from sort of, you know, hope for better luck in that front, you know, what do Leeds need to do this summer, do you feel, to make sure that you're not sweating on the last day again, because I'm sure you don't want to.
No, absolutely not. That's the biggest thing for me, is that once the dust settles from this, we have to learn lessons from it. I mean, not particularly us, the fans, but the board and the coaching staff need to sort of learn lessons. There's been a couple of sort of, I guess you could call them post-mortems of the season, saying about what needs to be done and what went wrong this season, about transfers that nearly happened and didn't, and, you know, things that if they had gone through, it would have happened, but a disconnect between the board and the coaching staff kind of stopped that a bit. There's already been statements from the owner saying that he's going to invest. Just investing properly where we need to, because that's been probably the biggest sticking point, is that Bielsa's philosophy has worked until it didn't.
Yeah.
And that's basically it. It's as simple as that. It worked fine until it stopped working. And then it's a small squad. You start missing Phillip, you start missing Bamford, the spine of the team, Cooper as well. And then you kind of look into fringe players who aren't quite as good. Obviously, we've given a record amount of debuts, I think, again this season to young players. So just fleshing out the squad would be brilliant. And I think we've got, I would say, more of a traditional coach in Jesse Marsh, a coach who would rather have a bigger squad than Bielsa, who would rather have kind of 11 players who know the system inside out, and then just fleshing it out with some young players. Whereas, you know, Jesse Marsh is probably more likely to have just backup players covering in key positions. So, you know, we probably need 5 or 6 players, because the last thing we want to do is do kind of a pull a Norwich, sign 12 brand new players, just throw them in and hope for the best. We need proper targeted investment. And obviously, I mean, the news already from yesterday, basically at full time, was that Brendan Aaronson's going to come and he's going to be confirmed next week, and that'll be the first centre midfielder we've signed since 2017, I believe. So that's certainly a good start, but it's got to keep going after that. And you know, I have full faith in them, because they're not, you know, they've got their heads screwed on, and they've held their hands up a little bit and said, we got it wrong, and this is where we need to improve. So yeah, there's big lessons to be learned, but you know, they're kind of easy fixes if they do what they say.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about giving the manager a decent shot, if you like. And I always feel like, you know, any manager deserves, you know, a proper summer window to reshape the squad. He's come in and it's, you know, to work with what you've got. And that's not to say that, you know, there's bad players at Leeds United, of course. But, you know, in terms of really when you see a manager's true style and system and, you know, way of playing is when they're able to make sort of a couple of changes. And it'll be interesting to see, I guess, who he brings in the summer and how that affects the team.
Yeah, it's really, it's been a really hard situation for him to come into. He's very similar to Bielsa, Jesse Marsh, in that he's very sort of system orientated, and he's very good at building teams that are greater than the sum of its parts, where you might have, you know, players that aren't particularly gifted individually, but when you put them in a system and they're well-drilled and they're hard-working and they're fitter than everyone else, then it works really well. But he can't possibly implement the system that he wants to play in a time where he hasn't got his players, he hasn't got any of his players, he hasn't got any breaks really to properly implement the system. But what he's done, if you look at what he's had with RB, well, It didn't go well for him at Leipzig, but at Salzburg, obviously you'll probably remember a couple of years ago, had those really good results, even though they did lose, but, you know, gave Liverpool a scare at Anfield.
Really well at Anfield, yeah.
You know, with that, when they still had Minamino and Haaland and players like that. So that's what is there for us. That's what we can expect to kind of see if he gets a proper go at a chance to bring in his players. And I've said from the start, I truly believe he is the guy to take us forward. And I've always thought that Bielsa's got a bit of a ceiling, you know, when you've got teams at the top of the table, like City and Liverpool, who are just miles ahead of everyone else. It's so hard to catch up with those. And you always felt with Bielsa that it was going to get to a point where eighth or ninth was probably as high as we were going to get with a squad of that size. So, you know, Jesse Marsh, who can be a bit more expansive, a bit more pragmatic with signings, you know, giving him a big transfer pot and getting in some decent money for the likes of Rafinha. You know, I mean, none of us want him to go. I don't even think he fully wants to go now, to be honest, but you know, if we get some proper money in for him, and then we can reinvest in numerous other places that we need strengthening. You know, I think it's optimistic. It's very optimistic, because if he gets us anywhere near to the level of that Salzburg team, then I think, you know, we won't be challenging for Europe next season, but I certainly think we could be aiming for like a sort of a Crystal Palace kind of level. Just a solid 12th will do, and that'll be fine.
A solid 12th next season, you know, yeah. I could see the appeal for that, because of you know, the I say the ups and downs, probably more downs this season, really, isn't it? Yeah. A frustrating one, and yeah, an uneventful year for Leeds United.
That'll be
year,
fine. Sure. Yeah, a boring old season would be welcome.
Well, here's the boring old season. Listen, Alfie, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. As I say, from LS11, do check out their podders. They say what they do this summer. I'm sure they've all got their own ideas. But Alfie, top man, thanks for coming on today.
That's great. Thank you.